And I'm Jenny Yokoyama. Coming up tomorrow morning at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8 on Positively Revolting, join Ani and Lynn as they look at rape culture through the lens of the recent sentencing of Stanford student Brock Turner, who received 6-month sentence after being found guilty of 3 counts of felony sexual assault. At 9 on Progressive Spirit, host John Shuck speaks with Dr. Nadia Gordon, a Palestinian-American who wrote the book Palestine is Our Home, Voices of Loss, Courage, and Steadfastness. At 9:30, we speak with Matthew Charles Cardinal, a Portland-based housing advocate, about an ordinance for affordable housing impact statements that he has presented to Multnomah County. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. And 11, on the Digital Divide, we hear an extended statement from Chelsea Manning. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. Not a KBOO member? You can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. Good night, Robert.
Good night, Jenna. Yesterday, environmental attorney Brent Foster spoke with KBOO News about conditions on the railroad track at Mosier, where the oil train derailed, ignited, and then exploded, following the pattern of Bakken oil trains derailing, igniting, and then exploding. Foster talked about how Union Pacific workers cut up a section of the track and carried it away, then reinstalled a new section in a very short period of time without any investigation being done. This was despite the city of Mosier and other local officials' request that the scene be investigated by local authorities to see what caused the explosion. Tonight, we're airing the extended interview.
Well, right now, actually, in the last half hour, somewhat shockingly, they've literally cut up a section of railroad track and are laying a new section of railroad track, which is just shocking because they basically rushed in the old track just several days ago. They had trains passing here within a half hour ago, and now we're literally seeing them take a large saw to the track. Obviously, there's been some problem with the track that they had down, and are patching it together with a new track. And it really just highlights this was an entirely rushed job to get these trains back into action. You can still see burned out oil tanker cars sitting just feet away from the active railroad tracks. And we already talked to one person this morning who yesterday saw sparks off the trains that were coming by, which is exactly why, the city of Mosier City Council and many others have asked the Burlington Northern and Union Pacific and the federal and state regulators to stop the trains until the oil is removed from the tanks that are sitting there. These are damaged tanks, and until there's actually some understanding of what caused the train derailment. I mean, this is one of the most insulting, high-risk things that I could imagine them doing after an accident, which is simply starting back up. They don't know why the accident happened, and they haven't even cleared away the carnage from the original accident. Now they're putting everybody at risk again.
Okay, Brent, who is they? Who is doing the work?
Well, right now it's a Union Pacific railroad that is actually doing the work on the track, and this is a railroad operation. And unfortunately, as I sat here and watched it, it's been Union Pacific calling the shots the whole way, and generally the agencies standing around nodding their heads and deferring to the railroad and the rush to essentially get freight, including oil cars, back running on this section of path.
Okay, now a couple things. So is that a property owned by Union Pacific? Where are the trains are running? Who owns that? Do you know?
It is within the city of Mosier. The railroad tracks themselves are owned by Union Pacific.
Okay, here's another thing. Our KBOO News reporters went out last night to a local grocery store and started asking people what they thought about this train accident. Virtually every single solitary person that our reporters interviewed thought that this was oil that was going to be sold in the United States to us consumers. Can you talk a little bit about what this oil was, where it came from, and where it was going?
Well, let's put this in the more important context. Is, and this is, I think, what's probably on everybody's mind, is that the massive plan to increase oil train exports and oil train shipments through the gorge has to do with export. It is not a domestic-driven issue. The issue is getting Bakken oil to the Asian and other Pacific markets. So what everyone has been facing and talking about in the news and the concern about oil trains, and you know, it's just like the concern for coal train exports. It's just like the concern over propane exports. You know, there is a massive effort underway to make the Columbia River Gorge, Oregon and Washington, this really one of the country's largest export corridors for fossil fuels. So that's the big picture context, and what I think, you know, really from this accident, the focus has to be on is stopping the plan to massively increase these oil trains. Now, I know what I understand is that this particular oil shipment were bound for Tacoma. I have heard mixed things back and forth on whether they're ultimately planned for export or domestic processing. But the reality is that, honestly, those are kind of the details that are less important than really the big picture. Is the state of Oregon and Governor Brown and others, are they going to support using state land, water, and wetlands to facilitate this massive expansion of fossil fuel exports? Right, and we've heard a lot that the state says, hey, there's only so much we can do. This is really a federal problem. The state has absolute authority to say state-owned land, state-owned water, state-owned wetlands, we are not going to let these things be used to support fossil fuel export projects, whether it's oil trains or coal or propane, because it's not in the public interest. And that's specifically in Oregon law, something the governor has and certainly State Lands Board has the right to do. Is just say, it's not in the public interest. You maybe are able to go get permission from the feds, but almost every fossil fuel export project needs state land, state water, or state wetlands to make it happen. So that's just one very specific thing that the governor and Oregon State has the ability to do. To basically make sure this thing just doesn't become type of thing, doesn't become commonplace.
Brent, speaking for yourself as an environmental attorney, what are some of the other considerations that you have that you think that more people should be aware of?
Well, I think that the in case there was any question, when they started back up both Union Pacific as well as the federal and state regulators that allowed it to happen, when they start shipping trains next to tanks that had, you know, tens of thousands of gallons of oil in them, they were actively dripping. I mean, you could literally see plastic tarps under these tanks that were catching oil and pooling with oil, and 10 feet, less than 10 feet away, you had railroad cars shooting by on brand new tracks. Again, every year in the gorge almost, we have fires that are started from sparks from railroad cars. It's not a unique or rare thing. And so watching them run those cars right by standing oil next to, you know, thousands of gallons of highly flammable oil, because this oil, even Union Pacific, compared it to basically sitting next to a gasoline tanker. You know, it's extremely flammable. This is not like motor oil or something like that. So to me, it just highlighted that there is no, like any guise, that these guys have a genuine concern or that they're willing to really not take risks with public safety, just went right out the window. I mean, if you've seen the pictures of it, you know, the pictures say 1,000 words. And didn't matter if the city of Mosier says, hey, take the oil out before you start shipping. These guys blew full steam ahead. Oh, probably 2 months ago, there were salmon running up Rock Creek right next to where the accident happened. Every year there's a salmon run there. You know, you did have oil reach the Columbia River. Fortunately, not as much as it certainly could have. But, you know, again, before the oil even got cleaned up, before anyone did any full assessment of where the oil had leaked, they had the tracks rebuilt and they were running trains again. It's watching them say for years and years, it's safe, it's safe, it's safe. And then it blows up. It's definitely not safe. They spent 2 days piecing it together, leave all the carnage from the first accident there with oil still in the tanks, and then again we hear it. It's safe, it's safe, it's safe. Feel free to ship again. I mean, it is, you know, there's really nothing, as best I can tell, where it would involve shutting down that rail commerce where any of the agencies, and that includes US EPA was at the table, Washington Department of Ecology was there, Oregon said some, the state of Oregon and Governor Brown said some good things in terms of their concerns about restarting traffic, but Burlington, Union Pacific was calling the shots, and it was so at odds. If you asked anybody who walked over those tracks and anyone just off the street, should you start shipping new train while you had flammable oil sitting just feet away, the answer was pretty darn obvious. And yet for the guys who were making the shots and making the decisions, it was business as usual, and they had no trouble opening those tracks.
Brent, though, I think part of that is clearly because there you are in Mosier. You know, if you could put the city of Mosier next to the petrochemical industry, I'm not sure if the petrochemical industry even knows that Mosier exists or even cares about it. And that's kind of where my mind has been, looking at the industry. This is literally a town like that is like the cost of doing business, because Lac Mégantique was almost completely blown off the map. I mean, can you just respond to that briefly?
Well, it's funny because I'm sitting here right now. I'm right across the street of the site where Mosier had the smallest town active Occupy camp during the Occupy movement in the United States. So it's impossible to kind of drive through Mosier and not remember that and kind of the diversity of people that were there. And the message was that this is a small town, but just like anywhere else, if you've got a railroad running through it, you're connected to this giant global commerce and level of global commerce. And like, people here are used to the railroad track. I mean, it's not like this is something that just showed up yesterday. But I think that there's this like level of trust that when you have a school, and our town school is just 300 feet from the track, from the playground where the kids play, 300 feet from the track. And when those tankers blew, it scared the crap out of every kid, and they were evacuated, and it's not something they're soon to forget. And for parents, who had their kids evacuated and then sat there, and we all sat there. I was driving down the road when I came upon the train fire. I didn't know what it was until I pulled up. I saw the plumes of smoke. I thought maybe it was a semi-truck on fire or something, and I looked to my left, and 50 feet away from the road were giant oil tankers. And that's when I said, okay, excuse my French, and put the car in reverse and got the heck out of there. But the reality was, it was, we're staring down the barrel of kind of the worst aspects of global commerce. And, it's the aspect that says, if we're going to lose $1 million an hour, we're willing to risk some more lives in Mosier by starting up train traffic. This is really no different than what they're planning with coal, running open coal cars through the Columbia River Gorge and blowing coal dust into the lungs of everybody who lives here. Or running, I was the other day in Cascade Locks outside at a restaurant, and 50 feet away rolled liquid petroleum gas cars. Liquid propane gas cars. So, I mean, talk about explosives. And there's just not, people who get injured in these accidents and the towns that get injured are really kind of just seen as collateral damage. And not that there aren't good people involved in trying to do the emergency response. And, we had a fantastic volunteer fire department that, literally walked right into the blast zone to try to help put this thing out. But you know what? It was over four hours, until we could even assemble enough water, until the fire department could pull together enough water to even start trying to put this thing out and cool it down. 4 hours. Those tanks sat there and burned, and not a drop of water, not a drop of foam, nothing hit the tank.
Brent, did you say it was the volunteer firefighters that did that?
We only have a volunteer firefighter response. Fortunately, lots of other agencies came in and other departments came in to help, but it was the volunteer fire department fighters that were actively involved. And basically, much of it was mobilizing at first to simply find the water. They were needing to supply over 1,500 gallons a minute of water and needed to go up to a winery to tap into their reservoir of water from the Columbia just to be able to get the water to start cooling down the fire. It just shows that very few communities, I'd say, small communities along the Columbia, have access to that type of water.
For KBOO News, I'm Lisa Loving.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 5:59. Coming up next, Rose City Native Radio.
KBOO at the Clinton is our monthly film series at the Clinton Street Theater. The film this month, Pinkwashing Exposed, will play Thursday, June 9th at 7 p.m. Pinkwashing is a term used when entities engaged in terrible human rights violations promote themselves as gay-friendly to improve their public image. Israel is the country most famous for this strategy. Pinkwashing Exposed explores how pinkwashing works and what activists are doing to fight back, including activists from Seattle who succeeded in 2012 in canceling high-profile queer events and more. Again, that's Pinkwashing Exposed. Thursday, January 9th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the 16th Annual Village Building Convergence, June 3rd to June 12th, to take place in locations all over Portland. The Village Building Convergence is an annual celebration of placemaking, community, natural building,